throws it down. Caught by Boston College. I don't believe it. Oh. It's a touchdown.
20, 10.
He's got it.
End zone. Touchdown, Titans. It's a miracle.
Brandon, a three-pointer out front. The natural buries a 30-footer at the buzzer. And the Blazers, a winner by two.
From basketball to hockey, football to the Olympics, this is a look at the day's best from the world of sports.
Griffey swings right away, and the Mariners have tied it in the ninth.
At half court, Michael Jordan beats the buzzer from half court.
And now, from the KBPS studios at Benson High School, this is Sports Ticker with your hosts, Sam Tung and Sean Phillipson.
Good afternoon, sports fans, and welcome into Sports Ticker with Sam Tung and Sean Phillipson on AM 1450 KBPS in Portland, broadcasting from the KBPS studios at Benson High School. A lot to cover today. Once again, Sean, as we're nearing the end of our show, the summer programming for Sports Ticker, just about a week to go.
Right.
As we are done next Friday. But another great show in store for you today. A lot of content. We cover a lot of sports today, so a wide variety.
Yes, whole lot.
And so today, most importantly, an interview with Ben Golliver in the next segment of the show, actually. Ben Golliver from BlazersEdge.com, breaking down the Portland Trail Blazers, the offseason. Talk quite a bit about Rich Cho today. We're just playing part one of the interview today. Part two of the interview will be aired tomorrow. We also are breaking down our top 10 Blazers of all time, so a lot of Blazer talk on the show today, and actually our first segment, which we'll get to in a second, also Trailblazers related, so
right.
Kind of a Trailblazers heavy show today. We also get your emails. We've done Major League Baseball mailbags all this week. If you have an email, send it in, sportsticker1450@gmail.com, or other ways that you can get in touch with us on Twitter at SportsTick1450 or on Facebook, SportsTicker on AM 1450 KBPS. We also have our quirky sports story of the day at the end of the show, and it's a pretty funny one. So that should be good as well. And then that'll wrap up the show for a Wednesday edition.
Yeah.
So, but today, Sean, to start the show, we have the schedule in our hands that the NBA has come out with for the Portland Trailblazers. We thought we'd break that down for you. A lot of interesting matchups this season, a lot of rematches, and in fact, they start the season with a rematch at home against the Phoenix Suns.
No doubt about it, but here's the bad note. To open up the season for the Blazers, like almost every year with the scheduling, they always have some tough starts to go by. They are starting the first 4 of the 5 on the road, and you point out they get the opening night against Phoenix. And then coming in November, the 28th through December 3rd, they have a 4-game Eastern Conference road trip, which they have been successful in over the last couple of years. They get New Jersey, they get the Sixers, which will see the number 2 overall pick in the draft. Boston, a strong team on the road, and Washington will see John Wall play.
Yeah, so they get Evan Turner and John
Evan
Wall
Turner, yes.
in the same road trip. They've actually, last season, they had five-game road trips, and I think they ended up going 3-2 and 4-1 on the East Coast swings. So Portland generally doing pretty well when you're talking about East Coast road trips, and they do have, as you pointed out, quite a few road trips to begin this season. We were on Blazers Edge this morning, or at least I was on Blazers Edge this morning.
Yeah.
I really liked what Dave on Blazers Edge said. They kind of have 3.5 road trips through the middle of December. They have 3 full 4-game road trips, and then they have a road trip that includes 1 road game, mm-hmm. and then a home game, and then 3 road games after that. So kind of 3.5, 4-game road trips, if you will. But a very good point made there. But they, as you pointed out, quite a few games on the road. They play 7 games at home in their first month and change, I guess, from October in the season. So, but, you know, starting that game against Phoenix, a couple big storylines. First, you have Hedo Turkoglu coming in to Portland.
Yeah.
He decided not to play for Portland, as we all know, last season. But then also, You're talking about a team, Sean, that defeated the Trail Blazers in the playoffs last year and ended up making it all the way to the Western Conference Finals.
They really did. But again, with the scheduling for the Blazers, mid-December, you point out they have a road trip, but they have a four-game Western road trip. Phoenix, San Antonio, Memphis, and Dallas, another tough alley for Portland to deal with, but we'll get to the elite teams in a minute. But the big key in this one, January the 9th on your calendar against Miami. Pretty much LeBron, Bosch, and Wade are coming to town to look to decimate the Blazers, but don't give up hope, Blazers. They're trying to, you know, hold their own in their own world. And then they get the 27th of the same month in January against Boston, which we'll see Shaq play along with the rest of the squad, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Rondo, and the Act 2. And late February to early March, again, they'll be facing four of the five Western Conference teams at home: New Orleans, the Lakers, Denver, Atlanta, and Houston. So hopefully Portland, on their own floor, they can get some wins here and have their home field advantage, which they've been successful at over the last couple of years in that category. And in March, this might be the toughest Eastern Conference road trip yet for the Blazers. In March, early, they have Orlando and Miami back-to-back.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, especially two of the top Eastern Conference teams in the league. And you get Charlotte and Atlanta, who's really trying to up their rankings in the Eastern Conference, really.
And Charlotte, you just to butt in here, Charlotte's a pretty good team, too. I mean, Charlotte, last season, a playoff team. They should make the playoffs once again this year. But kind of an up-and-coming team. They're a Larry Brown team. They're kind of tapering off. A lot of people thought that they peaked last year, but still, those are all four solid playoff teams. I think that every single one of them, three of the four could finish in the top four seeds in the Eastern Conference when you're talking about the playoffs by the end of the season. So, great point by you. Very tough road trip in March.
Now for the Lakers, the rivals of the Blazers. First time in a while, I think. They met three times last year. They will meet four times this year, two on the home floor and two on the road. Their first home game against the Lakers will be on February the 23rd, and the last one will be near the end of the season, April 8th. So important for the Blazers in April to get to chunk up as many wins as they can possible and look to get far in the win column to see how far where the rankings will go in the postseason playoff rankings. Now, Blazers, finally, they have to beat the elite teams in the conference as top five. They had an issue with that last season against very few, but they have to beat the top five and stop the bleeding in two teams. They got to beat Cleveland on the road, which they haven't done in a long while.
Well, also, but I think that's going to be a little bit easier because LeBron isn't there.
Exactly, yes. And Boston, they have not won in Boston in a long while because they've been so good at playing at home. And remember about the overtime game last year, which they came so close to doing. So here are the five teams Portland's got to beat. They got to beat the Lakers on the Western Conference side. They have to beat Dallas. They have to beat Utah, which is really trying to improve on their roster. Denver's been a tough team on the road to beat. And Oklahoma City, surprisingly, I'm putting them on the list just because they're talented. They know they are a playoff team. They're at that spot where they can feel like, hey, we could beat any team in the league and up our rankings a little bit.
And two, I think that against Oklahoma City, they play them their first game against Oklahoma City at home on November 4th.
Yeah.
And you know, if there's a healthy Greg Oden, the national picture is really going to be focusing on that Oden Durant matchup too. And I think that once you can, if you're the Portland Trailblazers, if you can find a storyline that the nation likes,
yes,
and you can somehow, you know, exploit that in a certain sense, but also if you know Oden and Durant is going to be something that the national media is focusing on, if you're the Portland Trailblazers, you say, I don't care what the storyline is. All I know is that the biggest networks in the country, all the big names in the media are coming and watching this game specifically. They're either coming to the arena or they're watching it on television because they know that there's a storyline here that people will read in the newspapers, that people will read in the blogs or in the articles online. So, you know, if you can find a storyline like this, this Oden Durant thing, I think it's a very big thing for Portland to find any national storyline right now, just because, you know, they had this, they kind of have this persona amongst the league. I still believe that they're kind of a young team that maybe has some, you know, they have some untapped potential, but a lot of people still think that the Lakers are the team to beat. ESPN came out a couple days ago saying that Portland will probably finish fifth in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
I think Portland has a lot to prove. We still, there's so much that we'd love to talk about, but time constraints are saying we should take a break.
Yes.
So we're going to come on back after this break. Ben Golliver from BlazersEdge.com on the other side. Check them out, BlazersEdge.com. If you haven't already, number one site for anything Trailblazers related. It's the best. Ben Golliver on the other side. This is Sports Sticker with Sam and Sean on AM 1450 KBPS.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location.
I was off-roading in the backcountry.
Oh, not surprising. You've got your home. Bears have theirs.
Yeah, but see, this wasn't just any bear. This bear was wearing jeans and a hat, as in a Smokey Bear.
Jeans and a hat. That's definitely Smokey. What exactly did he have to say?
Well, I was about to start up my ATV on a trail near a bunch of dry brush.
Oh, I can guess where this is going.
Right, right. Smokey told me that was dangerous because ATVs give off sparks, and one spark can start a wildfire.
That's true. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Wow, no kidding?
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
that was a joke.
Oh.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
McGruff the Crime Dog here with my nephew Scruff. Here's the address for my new free comic activity book.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
It shows kids what to know about guns and drugs and bullies and strangers. And it's got games and puzzles, too. Write it down now.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ad Council.
I'm just a kid.
I'm 6.
I'm 9.
I'm 4.5.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Cause mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
We're back with Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS in Portland. Joining us on the program, one of the reporters from BlazersEdge.com. And by the way, if you haven't been to BlazersEdge.com, it is stop number one, really, for me, for anything Portland Trailblazers. Ben Golliver, what's happening?
Not too much, guys. How you doing?
Good. And first thing that we want to cover here, it's kind of a lull in the off season. I'm sure you noticed that. You've probably had a little time to reflect. Biggest story of the off season thus far?
Well, it's either Rebecca Harlow going to the Lakers or it's got to be Kevin Pritchard getting fired, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Probably the former, though, right?
No, I mean, I think the biggest story of the offseason really is, you know, the Pritchard out, Cho in storyline, and it's kind of a continuing to develop one as we find out, you know, which pieces Rich ends up bringing in around him. But, you know, Kevin Pritchard to go from what some people consider to be, you know, a top five GM or at the very least a top 10 GM in the league, to find himself so abruptly dismissed on draft night, you know, on the heels of Tom Penn's firing back in March. I think, you know, it doesn't really get much bigger than that. You know, draft night, I've kind of described it before as a funeral. I mean, you know, it was a really bizarre scene out there. You know, you had a lot of media who, you know, I kind of felt like, you know, almost on the verge of tears a little bit just because Pritchard was such a popular person, such a galvanizing figure locally. You know, you also had a trade of Martell Webster, who's another very popular figure among the Portland media. And, you know, it was just a really bizarre, kind of surreal scene with it all happening so quickly, you know, as the picks were being announced and reports are coming in that Pritchard won't be back. So to go from that to, you know, a month and a half later, we new guys in place, obviously a really sharp intelligent guy, you know, someone who's kind of trying to make the team his own. I think that's the biggest story of the offseason. You know, it was kind of a quiet summer personnel-wise. They did their work early and got Marcus Camby locked up to a two-year deal and used their mid-level on Wesley Matthews. So other than that, you know, there's been some trade rumors about Rudy, but it's almost been all front office drama and not much roster shifting, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so if you're saying that Kevin Pritchard, obviously a very likable amongst the media members, how's the response been to Rich Cho? Has the media kind of embraced Cho as a media-friendly GM?
Yeah, you know, Rich is an interesting guy, just the way he communicates, his communication style. You know, I think he's a lot more comfortable one-on-one in personal situations where he's able to, you know, directly talk to you and kind of carry on a conversation. You know, he was known as a really popular person at his earlier stops, whether it was in Seattle or Oklahoma City. You know, his coworkers really, really liked him. They were kind of, you know, he's the kind of person that really gets people to work hard for him and with him. And I think that carries over to his one-on-one conversations with media members. You know, I think there's still some question about how does he do in front of groups. You know, he doesn't really have that same, you know, magnetic personality that Kevin Pritchard did when you get all the cameras around him. He really, you know, that was when his time to shine was when he had all those cameras on him. You know, Rich just has a different personality. He's a lot more low-key. You know, and he's much more comfortable talking to people individually. But, you know, he has a lot to say. He's the kind of person that packs a lot of punch into his words. Very efficient talker. You know, you can learn, you know, all about a player from him in, you know, five or six sentences because he chooses his words so carefully and he gives such a thorough breakdown of players. You know, he makes it so tight. You know, it really is almost like a computer program or something like that, where, you know, it's as efficient as it can be, takes up as little space as possible, and yet conveys the maximum amount of information. He's not really a BS kind of guy. He's going to give it to you straight. And I think a lot of people are going to appreciate that. I mean, he is from the Northwest, so I think he's got some Northwest tendencies too, you know, just in terms of his general friendliness. You know, and also, you know, his desire to be liked. I think that, you know, he shares that with Kevin in the sense that both of them see themselves as the face of the franchise to a certain degree, and they're going to try to, you know, put forth a very positive face. They're going to care about how their franchise is perceived, and that's not always the case in the NBA. There's a lot of teams where, you know, management's really kind of tone deaf to the fans' interests, and they don't really care so much about their public perception, and you know, that kind of a model doesn't really work here in Portland. I think you've got to have a tight connection with the fan base, and also, you know, by extension of that, with the media. And I think both those guys get that, and I think certainly Rich has done a good job here in his first month. But I think we need more Rich Cho personally. Like, you know, his story is fascinating to me. You know, I was able to see him a little bit on day one in terms of how he interacted with people. You know, when they did announce his hiring, it was very interesting. It was almost captivating, and I want to see even more of him. I, you know, I had encouraged the Blazers to get him out front even more, and hopefully he will when he announces his new assistant GMs, and it will go from there. But
is there any?
I got nothing bad to say about him at this point. I think, you know, it's all going to depend on what moves he makes, what are those first moves that he's looking to do. And I think one that people have looked at is maybe trading Rudy Fernandez. Another, you know, is maybe how does he handle the Greg Oden situation. And I think those are going to be the real measure. It's hard to judge a guy before he's done anything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Is there any word on the assistant GM front?
Yeah, last Thursday he told us he had zeroed in basically on two candidates that he wanted to hire as assistant GMs. His model is going to look a lot like what it looks like in Oklahoma City, where, you know, he wants to have basically two assistant GMs that report to him. The key difference really is that, you know, he sees himself, I think, as the salary cap, collective bargaining agreement kind of guru. He doesn't really see that as a place where he needs a lot of assistance. From everything I'm hearing around the league, you know, the two people that he's looked at and he's zeroing in on his targets are going to be Oklahoma City's director of basketball personnel, pro basketball personnel, which is Bill Branch. Been a long-time scout, has connections with USA Basketball. He's been in the league basically 20 years. The other guy is going to be Steve Rosenberry, who has that same position, but with the Atlanta Hawks. A similar deal for him, I think he's a little bit stronger on the college side. Apparently he has really good connections with a lot of college coaches. So I think the idea of how he's forming his assistant GMs and what he's looking for in his front office is really, you know, he's trying to address the criticism of him, which is, you know, you're a first-time GM. You're not a basketball guy. You're just kind of, you know, maybe even a nerd, some people would call him. Mm-hmm. I think he's trying to address those questions by saying, hey, you know what, I'm going to have the best scouting department in the league. I'm going to have really talented, experienced voices advising me on these issues, and I'm going to have the best information possible to make decisions. And when you look at, you know, bringing in two guys like the two guys I just mentioned, Branch and Rosenberry, who are both longtime scouts, you bring both of those guys in, and add them to an already existing scouting department, which is really, really strong. It has been strong for years because that was a big priority of Kevin Pritchard's era as well, whether you're looking about the international scouts or you're looking at just how they handle the college scouts. I mean, you're going to have a lot of really intelligent voices being able to advise and potentially up to four full-time, you know, career-length scouts, basically, in that boardroom. So I think if there's a question that comes out of that, it's is it too many voices a possibility? You know, I mean, are you getting too many reads on players? Are you able to form a consensus from all of those opinions? And I think that's going to be the big question for him, but he's certainly not going to lack for information. And I think, you know, Blazers fans should be happy about that because the more information route has really paid off well in the past. You know, a guy like Nicholas Batum, for example, is someone that they picked out, you know, late in the first round after he had a little bit of a slide. A guy they did a bunch of research on. They had seen him a lot when he was young. They had a really good idea what he would be able to project to be. They loved his tools. You know, and then, you know, he comes over here and has a really bad summer league and everybody panics, you know, not internally, but, you know, the fans a little bit panicked. And, you know, they weren't panicking because they had seen him and seen so much of him for so long. And that's really what you need to do if you're doing scouting, right, is you need to do your homework years in advance to when you're actually going to draft a player. And I think that's going to continue here. And certainly, you know, I think Rich is a scout in his own right. I know he was actually doing some scouting for Oklahoma City. It was kind of a unique thing about their front office is they had their assistant GMs on the road actually doing professional scouting. So, you know, you might find them at a random game on the road, and he would be there taking detailed notes on certain players, maybe players they were looking to target in free agency or by trades. You know, that's not something that you see every day. You know, certainly in Portland, the assistant GM, Tom Penn, was, you know, almost fully consumed with the salary cap and trade proposals and collective bargaining agreements, and he wasn't doing a ton of on-the-road scouting. And so, you know, I think that, you know, Rich is a good scout in his own right, but he's obviously got a lot of smart voices, and he's the kind of person who knows, you know, more information and more good information is the way you make the best decisions.
And that was Ben Golliver, reporter for BlazersEdge.com. That was just part one of our interview with Mr. Golliver. We're going to be playing part two of that interview tomorrow as we delve even more into the roster, talk a little bit of Greg Oden as well. So come on back for that again tomorrow, part two of the interview with Ben Golliver, reporter for BlazersEdge.com. When we come back, more sports action on the voice of the Portland Public Schools, AM 1450, KBPS.
They're going to jump out of trees. You can't stop them. They'll go down the slide head first. They'll make parachutes out of sheets. They'll balance on things that are impossible to balance on, like the back of a couch or a windowsill or a scooter seat. They'll run with sharp objects. They'll run into walls. They'll climb things that won't hold their weight. They'll put their fingers in places where they could get smashed. They'll drive their tricycles down steep hills. They'll bounce balls off their faces. They'll step on each other. They'll jump on each other. They'll invent whole new ways to put themselves in jeopardy. But one of the most dangerous things kids will do happens while they're sitting perfectly still. Kids who ride in a car without a booster seat are much more likely to suffer serious or fatal injury during a crash than kids in boosters. But amazingly, 80% of all kids who need them aren't in them. After a toddler seat and until they're 4'9", boost your kids, and don't let them down.
Go to boosterseat.gov to learn more about the importance of boosters. A message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Careful at the party, hun. No alcohol, right?
I know, Mom.
Seriously, you're still growing, and it messes with your judgment.
Yeah, I know.
Trust me, you could do some things you don't really want to do. If you're a grown woman, it's different, but you're not.
I know, okay? I know.
Teenagers know everything. So talk about underage drinking before they know it all. Before they're teens. Start talking before they start drinking. And keep talking. Learn more at StopAlcoholAbuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I'm Peyton Manning. On the football field, I always had to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Sports Ticker continues on AM 1450 KBPS. Now back to Sam and Sean.
Welcome back to Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS in Portland. I'm Sean Phillips along with Sam Tung, and it is a Wednesday edition of the show. We have covered up numbers 10 through 7 this week,
And this is our top 10 Blazers of all time.
Yes, top 10 Blazers indeed. And you, in case you missed yesterday's show or any of our shows of this week of the Blazers, really of our picks, you could listen in this go to kbps.am and listen to the audio links to past weeks of our show, and you'll hear our thoughts on each Blazer.
And as I mentioned yesterday, too, if you are listening on the radio or you aren't near a radio and you're downloading the show or you want to listen to the show on a computer, you can do that as well. KBPS.am, there's a Listen Live link on the left side, and you can listen to us from anywhere in the world, from any computer. We are with you 24 hours a day here at KBPS, Summer Sound Programming, from 9 until 4 o'clock. You get 9 to 3 is music, 3 to 4 is us here at Sports Ticker, and then the rest is all music. So, but as I said, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year is KBPS programming, kbps.am.
Now we go on to the Blazers. Number 6 we have for today, for Wednesday, Maurice Lucas.
Yeah, one of the most iconic Blazers of all time. Guy that... he's battling cancer right now.
Yes.
Everyone in this entire community wishes him well, especially here on Sports Ticker. We all do the same.
Yeah.
But, Sean, he was a key piece to that championship puzzle.
He really was, wearing that number 20 uniform. And speaking of his 20, he recorded 3 games of 20 points and 20 rebounds for him. 2-time all-time NBA team member in the 77-78 first team and the second team in 78-79, 3-time All-Star for the Blazers. He really had a lot of players surrounding him in the team. And we're going back to the championship in Philadelphia. His mind is always going right back into that day because it feels like it was a special day for him a whole lot, because it was really the turning point of his life when he really went into the championship. And the Maurice Lucas was the enforcer for the team, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and in that championship, the story goes that the team was down 2-0.
Yes.
And in the series, but in that second game against Philadelphia, he kind of got in a little brawl with Daryl Dawkins. Then they started, you know, throwing punches and whatnot. And then they come back to Portland. Portland does, down 0-2. And Maurice Lucas, this is where he got the nickname the Enforcer. They introduce him at the Memorial Coliseum, and the crowd just goes bananas after he gets introduced because of what he had done and standing up for his teammate in Philadelphia. And then right after he gets introduced, instead of going into the huddle, he immediately goes over to the Philadelphia 76ers bench and shakes the hand of Daryl Dawkins. And Luke says that ever since that, or after that moment, Daryl Dawkins was just absolutely terrified and wasn't the same player like he was in the first two games. And really, maybe, you know, a moment like that, certainly one of the smaller moments. It didn't even happen on the floor in the 48 minutes of play, but a play like that. Maurice Lucas, I mean, those are the kinds of things that the enforcers do, are really getting the heads of the other team. And
yeah,
to get in the heads of a guy like Daryl Dawkins, too, one of the best players really in NBA history.
Yeah, really.
And then that was really where the enforcer came from. As we like to say, the enforcer, they're called the enforcers for a reason. He never backed down from anyone. He wasn't afraid to be physical. And really, too, Sean, the type of player that when you paired him along with Bill Walton, a guy that was willing to bang and, you know, take on a couple defenders and push people out of the way and really cause a little more attention physically. And a guy like Bill Walton, who certainly wasn't as physical a player as Maurice Lucas, a guy that was actually really fragile in most of his career.
Right.
And he really took attention away from Bill.
I think so. But Bill had a lot of games in terms of with the points and rebounds. But he was their overall best rebounder on the team. He was their kind of intimidator in the inside. and you got Lucas as your enforcer. Those two, a 1-2 punch, no, really, no doubt about it. And next we have Brandon Roy at number 5.
And most people are going to disagree, just like people are going to disagree that Rasheed Wallace shouldn't be in the top 10. Brandon Roy, people are going to say that's too high at number 5. We are, A, biased because we grew up with Brandon Roy.
Right on.
And B, I'm going to go back to this era argument that we talked about a little bit on the Monday edition of the show. And my argument is, if you haven't been listening to the show, the argument that I'm proposing is that there's been 4 major eras of Blazer basketball, just like with any team. And so the 4 eras of Blazer basketball are the championship days with Maurice Lucas and Bill Walton. And then we get into the Drexler years with Terry Porter, Jerome Kersey, Clyde Drexler, those guys, Buck Williams, who also made the list, as well as Clifford Robinson, who's also on this list. And then we get into the Jailblazer era, which is the Rasheed Wallace, Bonzi Wells era. And then we have kind of the redeem team right now, which is the present team that is making their own push for a championship. But I think all 4 of those eras are kind of, there's one face that is most recognizable. There's one face, one player that comes to mind when I say, oh, you remember the Jailblazer era? You immediately think of Rasheed Wallace. Or, God, remember those 90, the year when they made the championship in 90 and 92? You automatically think of Clyde Drexler.
Yeah.
Or remember when they won the championship in 77? The first thing you think of is Bill Walton. And I think that the reason that Brandon Roy is worthy of a top 10 spot and really worthy of a top 5 spot is because people say now, and this is the most positive light outside of that championship, I think, when people say, remember that championship year, people just think of the greatness of Bill Walton, and just that was kind of the highlight of a Blazer fan's, kind of the life of a Blazer fan. That was the best moment for them. But then when you say, remember when that team was the Jailblazers, but then they were the worst team in the NBA, but then they really turned it all around, and everyone thinks really positively about it, the first thing you think of is the drafting of Brandon Roy and the trade that they made with Minnesota in order to bring Brandon Roy here into Portland. He is the guy, he is the face of the turnaround of this franchise. The Jailblazer era could be the worst era experienced by any basketball organization. It was embarrassing what this team was doing and all the trouble that they were getting into and the face that they were giving the city of Portland. And now to know that Brandon Roy is kind of the face of the new team, a new direction for the team, a new togetherness of this team, a new community-based team, and getting back to what it took for this team when in the 90s when they made it to the championship for 2 years and in the 70s when they won an NBA championship. And I think that that is one reason, and probably the biggest reason, why Brandon Roy should be in the top 5 is because he was a positive influence on the changing nature and the changing culture of this sports town.
He really was. And as of right now, he is one of 3 players to win the Rookie of the Year and the 3rd fastest to record 5,000 points in a career for Roy. He's ending his 4th year, coming into his 5th year. But his statistics, like Roy and Drexler, are about the same. But Roy has a scoring average, but Drexler has a better rebounding and assist averages and a lot more steals, because Drexler, back in his day, he always gobbled up a lot of steals in his prime.
Well, also remember, too, Drexler played on a much better team than Brandon Roy has been playing on. The Roy-era Blazers have not been championship contenders, and they really aren't. I mean, they everyone says one piece away, but really, Brandon Roy is the best player on this team, and they may be more than one piece away. They've never made it out of the first round of the playoffs, and that team in the Drexler era made it into the NBA Finals 2 years, 2 out of 3 years. They made it into that Western Conference Final the year that they didn't make it into the NBA Finals. So that team was much better. They had much better leadership on that team. They were a more experienced squad. So probably that's why the reason that Brandon Roy has a higher point total, just because he's been the go-to guy for his 4 years in the NBA. And then when you talk about the Drexler days, he didn't always have to be the offensive threat on the team. I mean, we talked about Clifford Robinson led the team in scoring for 3 straight years. So that in large part the reason why Drexler, he had an opportunity to do other things other than score.
Not only that, for Roy, he had a lot of accomplishments, including that buzzer beater against Houston from about 30 feet. and won the game. It was literally a blind-like way for Roy to get a shot, because when he had the ball, he was behind, his back was to the basket, and then he had to fire one up with over Artest and the defense of McGrady, and then he had to, like, throw up a miracle shot to get the win. I know Blazer fans remember that. And also the Phoenix game, where I think he had 52 points to really get the Blazers into a positive note in that year.
I was at that game in Phoenix when he scored the 52. I honestly had never gotten so loud. I had never heard the Rose Garden even remotely close to that loud until they made the playoffs. But the playoff games against that first playoff game, I was at the first playoff game too, when they played Houston, and that was probably the loudest I've ever heard the Rose Garden in 10 years. But that Roy's 52-point performance, but the shot against Houston,
yes.
That was, I put it in my notes, that could be one of the greatest plays in Blazer history, and it may go down as one of the greatest plays in Blazer history. I mean, it's been on all the commercials. That is, it's in our intro. It's in everything Blazer related, but just that one shot. And the thing about Brandon Roy too, the thing that he probably has over every player in this category, excuse me, he's only played in 4 seasons.
Yes.
Yet he has made more buzzer beating shots than I've seen any player other than like Kobe Bryant in the last 5 years.
Right.
So this kid, for whatever reason, and it may actually not even be, it might actually be to his disadvantage, because everyone expects him to make the game-winning shots now. He makes them, he's made one against Houston. He's had one, you know, against, I think the one from last season was against the Knicks, and where,
yes,
he just kind of had a scoop shot that went in. I mean, this guy is a whiz at the end of a game, and certainly a guy that you could give the ball to at the end of the game. And I think that that's really a defining piece, and one of the reasons why he should be in this top five. A, because he changed the face of an organization, and B, when you talk about the end of the games, I mean, if you could pick any Blazer in history to have the ball at the end of the game, I think that there is certainly a very good argument for Brandon Roy to have the basketball because of his history, because of some of the shots that he has made. And certainly he has the confidence to shoot him. He knows that he is the man in crunch time. And he is proven that he is worthy of that persona.
And that will do it for our numbers 6 through 5 with Maurice Lucas and Brandon Roy, current all-star for the Blazers. Continuing our top 10 greatest Blazers of all time, ranking them from 10 to 1. Tomorrow for our Thursday show, we're going to start with 4 and 3, and you don't want to miss that. Up next, we'll get to our mailbags. You can send your emails into sportsticker1450@gmail.com. And in case if you guys want to send in your email will be answered live on the show as long as it's appropriate, and it'll be ready to go. Again, coming up next, mailbags. This is Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS in Portland. I'm Sean Phillips along with Sam Tung. It's Wednesday, August 11th, 2010. This is Today in Sports. First birthdays: Hulk Hogan, born 1953. Craig Elo, born 1961, and Patrick Mills, born 1988.
Patty Mills.
Yep, in that list, too. Let's toss the sand for the events for August 11th.
August 11th, 1919, the Green Bay Packers Football Club is founded. August 11th, 1929, Babe Ruth becomes the first baseball player to hit 500 home runs in his career, with a home run at League Park in Cleveland, Ohio. And August 11th, 1993, Roger Clemens, as a member of the Red Sox, records his 2,000th strikeout. And that will do it for Today in Sports for August 11th, 2010. This is Sports Sticker with Sam and Sean on AM 1450 KBPS.
Are you ready?
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is your girl, Fergie, asking you from the heart to donate blood at your local American Red Cross. Giving blood is easy. It only takes about an hour, and a single donation can help save up to 3 lives. You might help a friend, a classmate, or a neighbor. Make your appointment to give blood today by calling the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE or by visiting givelife.org.
The glamorous, the glamorous, glamorous, the glamorous.
The need is constant. The gratification is instant. Give blood.
You're listening to Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS. Once again, here's Sam and Sean.
Welcome back to Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS in Portland. Sean Phillips along with Sam Tung. And it is now time for our mailbag section.
Pitch! Listen up! It's time for mail call!
To mail! The mail is here!
Ooh!
What's this? A letter for me!
Mail's in!
You got mail, baby!
If you'd like to send in an email, you can do so. Send it to sportsticker1450 at gmail.com, or you can follow us on all sorts of places. Send us messages all sorts of ways. We're trying to make it as convenient for you as possible to send us an email here at SportsTicker. You can also send it to sports@sportstick1450. That's on Twitter, or find us on Facebook. Become a fan of our page, Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS. You can send us a message there too. I'm pretty sure there's in Facebook land. It seems pretty possible to do stuff like that. They've pretty much figured out a way how to do everything on Facebook. So that would be another way to do it. Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS again. Your emails, this one coming in from Dan in Southeast Portland. Dan writes in, this is a pretty basic question. Do you think baseball should have a salary cap? Well, Dan, an easy question, but a very difficult answer. He asked that question in about 8 words, and this is a question, actually 9 words, sorry, I counted wrong. But this is a question that has been a very big one amongst baseball enthusiasts, especially considering that this is a question that really could change the entire culture of Major League Baseball. With one decision, they could say, we want a salary cap. Okay, cool. Well, that ruins the fact that the Yankees have more money to spend than everyone else. That ruins the fact that the Red Sox have more money to spend than everyone else. And a lot of people would agree that's a good thing. A lot of people would agree that my team... say you're a Mariners fan and you say, my team has a lot less money than the New York Yankees do. But, you know, at the same time, they have a lot less money than the Yankees do. And I think that it should be more equal. I think that we should be able to have as much money to spend as the Yankees, or more realistically, the Yankees have as much money to spend as we do. So when you think about it in those terms, it seems fair, doesn't it? I mean, that's what Major League Baseball has. Or not Major League Baseball. The National Basketball Association has. That is what the NFL has had for a number of years. Although this year, problems with their players' unions and the owners, and there could be a lockout, and that's kind of a whole different story. But right for next year, the NFL won't have a salary cap. But for a long time, they did, and they had a firmer cap than what the NBA has right now. The NBA a soft cap where they can go over the cap, but you have to pay a luxury tax on it. Ask Rich Cho. He'll explain it to you how it all works. But in Major League Baseball, no salary cap at all. It basically, if your team can spend as much money or as little money as they want on players. And, you know, to a certain extent, why not? If you have the money, if you're the New York Yankees and you have a lot of money and there's no salary cap, you might as well spend as much money as you want and, you know, spend $300 million or whatever they spent 2 summers ago getting Mark Teixeira, CeCe Sabathia, and A.J. Burnett. They got those three guys all locked up because they wanted the best pitchers. And, you know, A.J. Burnett has not been a very good pitcher this year, and the New York Yankees, and this is what frustrates baseball fans the most, the New York Yankees can make a mistake on a player, give him a massive contract, but they can absorb that amount of money if they end up making a mistake, because they ended up getting CeCe Sabathia and Mark Teixeira out of the deal. Say you're the San Francisco Giants or something like that, that's on a lower income level than the New York Yankees. Well, really, any team in Major League Baseball is on a lower income level than the New York Yankees. But if you're a Giants organization, I'm just throwing that out there, that you say you want to get A.J. Burnett, he's on the market, and you spend a bunch of money to get him, and, you know, he stinks. That is a much bigger deal than if you're the New York Yankees, and you can say, oh, that's all right, we'll, you know, we'll just buy another pitcher. We'll buy Cliff Lee at the end of this season. So you're looking at a team that is willing to spend money and can absorb contracts. And just to get back to the question now, Dan, again, asking, do you think baseball should have a salary cap? Here in our mailbag section, Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS. I think baseball, more than any other sport, needs to have its good teams and its historically good teams be good. This is a league, trying to find the word there. This is a league that has been around for a lot longer than the NBA and a lot longer than the NFL, and a lot longer than I don't know when the NHL started. Might have to look that up. But this is a league that records go back to the 1890s and the 1880s. This is a league that has a lot of history surrounding it. And when you get to a historical game like baseball that's literally twice as long as these other two leagues, then I think that there's just too much history that you can't ignore the fact that the teams like the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox and the now the LA Dodgers, they were the Brooklyn Dodgers, I mean, the Dodgers, these teams, I think for the integrity of the game, and people are going to hate me for saying this, but I think for the integrity of the game and for the viewership of games and just purely from a business standpoint, those teams need to be good. You need to have the New York Yankees at the top of the pile every single year. Imagine if Toronto were really good. You know, who would care? And that's not to poke fun at our Canadian friends, but still, those teams like that in the AL East, I want to see the Red Sox and the Yankees at the top of the AL East every year. Just like in the NBA, I didn't want to see Orlando Phoenix. I wanted to see Boston, L.A. playing in the NBA Finals. There's something special about, there's kind of a historical aspect of it. It kind of puts it in context. It makes it seem like bigger than, it's not the NBA Finals. It's a Lakers-Celtics Finals, if that makes sense. So we're talking, again, about should baseball have a salary cap? And there's one of the kickers, though, is teams like Tampa Bay, San Diego, and Cincinnati are all teams. Cincinnati actually has quite a good history, but not so much Tampa Bay and San Diego. Those are two fairly new teams. But when you're talking about those three teams, those are all teams that are fairly lower income. They're teams that haven't been fantastic for a number of years. They haven't really competed at a World Series level. San Diego had moments in their past, but in Cincinnati definitely had, Pete Rose was the greatest hitter of all time, people would argue. So those teams are really, but right now those teams are really kind of lower income teams. And to be honest, I don't really want to see those guys in the World Series. I actually wouldn't mind seeing Cincinnati in the World Series. I think that they are historically a very good team, but I kind of want to see the Phillies in the World Series. I kind of want to see the Yankees. And this is coming from a fan who isn't necessarily invested in one baseball team. And I think that that's the biggest difference here. We have to divide this is from an outsider's perspective. We have to kind of take a step back and say, a lot of people probably don't want there to be a lot of people want there to be a salary cap, because their team always gets roasted in the regular season by the teams that have more money. But what I like about baseball And it's different than every other sport because without a salary cap, baseball can be more run like a business. The teams that become a bigger juggernaut in the business world, if you are the New York Yankees, I mean, that is a business. The New York Yankees are a brand name, and they are making more money than the Arizona Diamondbacks are. They're making more money than the Pittsburgh Pirates are right now. They're making more money than the Kansas City Royals are. They're worth more money, and they're bringing in more money. More people are going to their games. More people are buying their merchandise. And I feel like if a team is rewarded for that, is that necessarily a bad thing? Is it necessarily a bad thing for a business? These aren't non-profit organizations. These are organizations that are in it to make as much money as possible and to win championships. And the reason that they want to win championships is because it brings in more money. I mean, the players do it because it's something that they've always dreamed of. But if you're, you know, one of the Steinbrenners, the reason that you're in it is, well, to continue your dad's legacy. But also, in large part, the reason that George was in it was because he wanted to win championships, but he also wanted to make money. I mean, he put a very small payment down on that team and built this empire, now the evil empire, into a business phenomenon. And I really think that a team like the Yankees shouldn't be penalized for that. And that's one of the reasons why I don't think that that Major League Baseball should have a salary cap. I think it's the one sport that's in that case. I think that there every other sport, you could be the Trailblazers. Paul Allen, who owns the Trailblazers, is probably maybe outside of Mark Cuban and that Russian billionaire in New Jersey, probably the richest owner in the NBA right now. And the Trailblazers have just as much of a shot at building a championship caliber team as a team like LA does. You know, they have the same amount of money to spend. Paul Allen has as much money to spend as all those guys. And really, Paul Allen probably has about as much money to spend as Mark Cuban does. But the thing is it becomes it's more strategic. And the reason that, again, now we have kind of a hometown bias creeping in here. I like the fact that the NBA has an equal chance for everyone. Obviously, location is different. If you're LeBron and you want to take your talents to South Beach, great. If that's because of a location, great. If you want to go LA, make more money through endorsements, fine, whatever. But if from a purely NBA basketball salary cap standpoint, all of those teams have an equal opportunity to spend the same amount of money and to make money a different way than professional baseball does. But that's just, I mean, there's the bias because we have a hometown team that we love and take pride in. But from an outsider standpoint in baseball, I've never really been a hardcore baseball fan. I've never really been, you know, I watch the Mariners probably 3 or 4 times a week. I'll root for them or whatever, but I'm not heavily invested in any team right now in Major League Baseball. And, you know, taking that approach, why not let them not have a salary cap and take the business and just have it be like a business? If you make more money, you get to spend more money. That's how it works. I think it's a little more real world than all the other leagues in professional sports right now. So that's kind of my take on your question, Dan, in Portland, Southeast Portland, excuse me. Do I think that baseball should have a salary cap? It could, but I'm still kind of enjoying seeing some of the best teams compete at the highest level year in and year out. You can send your emails in, just like Dan, sportsticker1450@gmail.com, or send us a Twitter message at sportstick1450. Follow us on Twitter as well, at sportstick1450. Also find us on Facebook, sportsticker on AM1450 KBPS. Now we'll do it for our mailbag section today. Coming up after this quick break, it is the quirky sports story of the day on Sports Ticker on AM1450 KBPS.
Hi, I'm Ryan Seacrest for RAD. Over 300 people in this country are killed every week by a drunk driver. That's the equivalent of 2 747 plane crashes every single week. And the problem isn't going away unless we all do our part to stop it. So if you see someone who's about to drive after drinking, get the keys. Don't leave it up to anyone else. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Everything you need to know about the world of sports. This is Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS.
Welcome back to Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS in Portland. I am Sean Phillips along with Sam Tung, and it is now time for our quirky sports story moment of the day. So, Sam, where does this go to here?
This is pretty funny. It's a couple that went to a Houston Astros baseball game.
Okay.
We'll try to post the photos and or I don't think there's a video, but there are pictures of this.
Okay.
So I was reading this article and I could just see this happening in front of me. There was a foul ball hit and it goes into the stands. And basically, but just to set it up, before the game, this couple, the girlfriend tells the boyfriend, I'm going to get hit from where we're sitting.
Yeah.
And the boyfriend says, no, you won't. I'll catch it if you do. And, sure enough, there's a foul ball that gets hit near this couple, and if you see the picture, it hits the girl.
Oh, my.
And she's trying to protect herself, covering her head, and then you see the guy about four seats away trying to cover himself up as he is, you know, trying to protect himself. So he said that they weren't going to get hit and that he would make sure that he caught the ball if it came near them.
Yeah.
And then you see the picture, and there's the guy three or four seats away, turning around, scared to death, and this poor girl just gets nailed with a foul ball.
Oh, my goodness. A bailout for a boyfriend, really.
Yeah, the guy, Bo, not cool, man.
Yeah.
You got to protect the girlfriend, and B, if you say that you're going to, you can't just drop the ball like that.
Yeah, and lie
literally
like that.
Literally drop the ball like that.
Yeah, it just does not make any sense, and I don't know what he was thinking. He should have just sticked right there as if it was a shield, an armor, or whatever it was, and, you know, you gotta be the protector. You don't want her to get hurt or have some serious head injuries or something.
The exact quote from Sarah, the girlfriend.
Okay.
Quote, as soon as we got here and I saw where we were sitting, I said, baby, I'm going to get hit. He said, no, you won't. I'll catch it if you do. We just had this conversation, and sure enough, the ball comes at me. He just bailed. Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about a bail moment. Ugh.
That, our quirky sports story of the day. We'll post the pictures on Twitter and Facebook. They're pretty funny. And that is going to do it for our show this afternoon. Once again, thank you to Ben Golliver from BlazersEdge.com for joining us. Part two of the interview with Ben tomorrow afternoon. It will be also in segment number two, but we will have a topic of the day first, and then we'll get to Ben Golliver. So if you want to listen to any more Blazer talk, and we also are continuing the top 10 Blazers of all time.
Right, through the next 2 weeks, really.
Yeah, so, well, this week, we're doing the top 10 Blazers of all time, counting them down 10-1. But next week, a little teaser, we're doing our favorite top 10 jail Blazers of all time, the worst of the worst.
The bad boys, really.
Yeah, it's hilarious, actually, to listen to all the stuff that they've actually done and how dumb they really were. But that is next week. But again, we're still breaking down the top 10 Blazers of all time, numbers 4 and 3 tomorrow. And then we get to number two and number one. You know who number two and number one are. You just don't know what order they're in. So that is going to be on Friday. Also, more mailbags this week. You can send them in. If you have an idea, have a question for us, send it in. sportsticker1450@gmail.com. Also, again, on Twitter, at sportstick1450, tweet us there. We're also going to put up the pictures of this quirky sports story as well. So at SportsStick1450 is where you can find us on Twitter. And finally, we are on Facebook as well, Sports Sticker on AM1450 KBPS. Become a fan of the page. You can message us there as well.
Yes.
A great way to get in contact with us on the social network site, Sports Sticker on AM1450 KBPS. And that is going to do it for our show this afternoon. Join us again tomorrow.
Yes.
As, again, a lot of stuff planned for you all, a lot of sports. We cover as many sports as we can in our hour of content. So we call it the most sports at the 3 o'clock hour, and it is because we are in control of everything sports related. We are in charge. We're the producers.
Yes,
so
we are.
We get to choose each and every little bit that goes on the show. So that's going to do it for today. For Sean Phillipson, I am Sam Tung. Once again, thank you all so much for joining us this afternoon. We look forward to seeing you all tomorrow at 3 o'clock, same time, same place. This is the voice of the Portland Public Schools and Sports Ticker with Sam and Sean on AM 1450 KBPS.
You've been listening to Sports Ticker, a comprehensive look at the day in sports. The preceding program has been a sports presentation of AM 1450 KBPS.